Call ourselves to order. Time is 7:10. This is the House Special Committee on Ways and Means. Today's date is the 24th of April. Present today are Representative Moses, Representative Hines, Representative Coring, Representative Whitaker, Representative Hocker, Representative Wilson. Those are committee members. In addition to that, we have Representative Ogg, Representative Gatto, and Representative Seaton. The agenda today will be public testimony on HJR 9, a constitutional amendment setting in place a spending and appropriation limit. Also, public testimony on HJR 26, a constitutional amendment regarding permanent fund inflation proofing and appropriations. We also have a bill on our docket today, and that will be our first order of business. HB 271. It is coming up under bills previously heard. We did discuss it yesterday. The subject of the bill is the passenger vehicle rental tax. We do have a CS in front of us that has been passed out to committee members and other members who are present today. Representative Hocker will speak to the CS. Before we do that, if we can move the CS, Representative Hocker.
Mr. Chairman, I move CS for House Bill number 271, Ways and Means, version 23-LS0936/S, dated 4-2303.
Without objection, that version is adopted and in front of us. Representative Hocker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This substitute incorporates responds to the public testimony we received yesterday from industry members. And it's been constructed in cooperation with the members of this committee and the bill sponsor, who is comfortable with the CS version. The CS version expands the definition of vehicles subject to the excise tax to include recreational vehicles as well as individual passenger vehicles. The rate assessed on passenger vehicles is reduced to 10% from the 15% level in combination with the other airport access fees and local taxes was too much of a burden on the industry, but the 10% becomes more fair and actually in line with national standards. The tax on recreational motor vehicles is established at 3% on the premise that recreational motor vehicles typically will rent on a dollar per day basis of 3 to 5 times as much as an average passenger vehicle, and it keeps the tax levies in a proportional perspective here. The bill also has the administrative provisions that the specific regulations for the administration of this shall be determined by regulation by the department, and indicates particularly that nothing in this bill in any way prohibits the lessor of the vehicle from collecting that tax, the excise tax, from the ultimate consumer. And we have definitions of both passenger and recreational vehicle, Mr. Chairman. So looking at this bill as how it fits into the ways and means process of the state, the state's general revenue system, I've reached a comfort level that, you know, we in the state of Alaska do have what I'm referring to as a general revenue system. We do not have dedicated revenues. We've got a broad spectrum of general revenues running from oil and gas excise taxes to fees for the registration of motor vehicles. This is, in our state's general revenue system, as has been pointed out, that really hasn't been looked at for many, many years, and in many ways is no longer consistent with what has become generally accepted across the country amongst other states for the funding of state government. An excise tax on vehicles is, a common mechanism. This bill is consistent with that is found to be a proven component of a general revenue system nationwide, and I think it fits into, as one of those components, an element of a comprehensive fiscal structure for the state of Alaska that makes sense and is appropriate at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hocker. Are there questions? Representative Wilson.
What are the estimated revenues that this will bring?
question should be directed to Representative Hocker, therefore Representative Hocker.
The fiscal note on the first version of this bill was about $7.5 million, if I recall correctly. I probably don't have it right in front of myself here. But that the $7.5 million fiscal note was predicated on all vehicles at a level of 15%, all vehicles, including recreational vehicles. So I'd obviously, at this, of course, having concluded the CS last night, we have not got the new fiscal note for yet, but I'm anticipating approximately a proportional reduction. So I'm guessing we, I don't even want to put a number to it, but I believe we'd have a proportional reduction in relation to the tax base.
I'll take a wild guess. My guess is that it's going to be something around $7 million, plus or minus. It will pick up a revised fiscal note with this CS as this CS moves along. Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reduced rate on recreational vehicles makes sense, especially since when a person is renting a recreational vehicle, they're getting not only a vehicle, but they're getting accommodations or lodging. We talked about the applicability of the municipal tax on vehicles, and I'm wondering whether is there applicability here to a bed tax that could be instituted by a municipality, and I'm wondering whether we ought to clarify whether it is applicable or is not, or can be charged in addition or not.
Representative Hocker, do you
want to... My response to that, Mr. Chairman, is two things. The imposition of bed taxes is typically justified as a means to promote economic development, tourism, that sort of funding, as well as to accommodate the additional costs that municipalities incur as a result of having tourists in their midst. The infrastructure costs, everything from all the public infrastructure in general. When you look at the motor vehicle provision here, from a standpoint of putting the additional burden on the community, the motor vehicle renter is also, contributing not through just a bed tax, not through a bed tax, but through motor fuel taxes and through, from their own standpoint, dumping fees and that sort of thing associated with the use of a recreational motor vehicle. So I don't see a need to, equate this to a bed tax as far as indicating that, it would be a, be applied in addition to a bed tax. That'd be, it'd be very difficult, in the sense that the different taxing jurisdictions here of this state, and the different taxing structures, I don't see this as an excise tax being in conflict with a bed tax imposition by a community.
That would be the short answer, right?
Yeah, that would be the short answer.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm not at all opposed to either way. I was just meaning that for clarity for what we're putting forward at some point in time, it would be good, because I believe the question will come up at some point, and if we don't clarify whether it is acceptable or whether it's not acceptable, just like we've done with the municipal tax, I think it leaves people in limbo, and that's my only question. I don't have a problem with it at all.
Okay, very good. So noted, and we will ensure that that is clarified. And in fact, by discussing it and clarifying it here, we are making it part of the record, and therefore should help with regard to some clarity. For the record, also, Representative Weirock has joined us, so too has Representative Samuels. Representative Hocker.
I would also like to this, having reviewed this one more time this morning, like to propose a technical amendment to the bill as written, page 2, line 15, and it state this in a verbal technical amendment, page 2, line 15, where the provisions of this chapter apply to a passenger vehicle, whether or not the vehicle is registered and licensed in this state, key point being rental companies that have vehicles licensed in other states and they're leasing them here, we don't want to exempt them. That definition needs to be included, say, a passenger vehicle and recreational vehicle. We've separated the definitions of the two in the bill.
So the addition is and recreational vehicle.
Passenger recreational vehicle or recreational vehicle, whether or not the vehicle is registered. Or recreational vehicle.
Okay, is that clear? Are there any objections to that small amendment? Seeing none, it is adopted. Further questions or comments regarding HB 271? Why don't we give ourselves about 5 minutes here just to peruse this and be comfortable with it. It is our intention to move it. To have had enough time to be comfortable doing that. We're going to take a 5 minute. For us, the CS for HB 271, Representative Hines.
Yes, I move CS for House Bill 271-23/S-0936/S out of committee along with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Are there objections?
I object.
Would you like to speak to your objection, Representative Corn?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I want to get into a longer rehash of my previous remarks, as I have spoken on the bill previously, and I do appreciate your indulgence here to have had a few more. But basically, I'm not convinced that a tax of this nature is something that is going to be beneficial to the economy, and I have not heard a compelling argument as to why we really need this tax, other than the fact that it's another revenue source. There were previous remarks to the effect that while the industry needs to contribute to the state because of what it consumes in terms of say wear and tear on roads or public facilities, but again I haven't heard any solid numbers that suggest there is a major detriment to our infrastructure from the industry. And I might add that the industry already is paying in terms of gas taxes, business license fees, the businesses themselves, vehicle registration fees, airport taxes, things of that nature. So there is, from my perspective, a fairly sizable contribution already by the industry. So if we want to move in a direction of encouraging economic development in the state and encouraging small businesses, which are the backbone of a good, strong economy, I think this is not a very prudent thing to be doing, with all due respect to the sponsor, whose efforts I do appreciate. So with that, I intend to maintain my objection to vote no. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Representative Coring, thank you. Are there further discussions with regard to HB 271?
Question, Mr. Chairman. Calling the question.
Madam Clerk.
Representative Moses?
Yes.
Representative Greenberg?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Wyrock?
Yes.
Representative, let's see, Rookberg is absent. Representative Corey?
No.
Representative Hines?
Yes.
Chair Whitaker?
Yes.
And Chair Hawker?
Yes.
7 yeas and 1 nay.
The bill moves from committee. Its next committee of referral is the Finance Committee. Thank you, members. Our next order of business is public testimony on HJR 9, a constitutional amendment setting in place a spending and appropriations limit. We have discussed this bill previously. Our purpose today is to take public testimony. Are there individuals in the audience who would like to testify to HJR 9? There are none. Do we have online testimony? We do not have online testimony. I fully suspect that if this resolution reaches the voters, there will be significant testimony. However, since there is none today, do committee members and or other members who are here, by the way, the record by virtue of the vote will show that Representative Gruenberg is here, but to let people know that he really is here, Representative Gruenberg has joined us.
Thank you.
If there are committee member comments on HJR 9, this is an opportune time to make those. Representative Hawker.
Since we last convened on HJR 9, I have been in recurring conversations with both members of this committee and with members outside this committee on the structure of this resolution. Because we all know this is a very, should this resolution become a result in an amendment to the Constitution, that is one of the most significant things that we could actually do in the state. As the Constitution is truly the backbone of the way the state operates, and our appropriations budget is in fact how we satisfy the needs, requirements, priorities of the people of the state. So this is looking at this amendment is not something to be taken into lightly, and The concerns that were raised were that the original, the amendment as proposed in the original version of HJR 9 was particularly restrictive. It essentially provided a flat basis for all future appropriations that did not have an escalating provision. Under it did allow on an individual basis each year we could inflate the amount spent or raise the amount spent over the base year by 2% with a 3/4 vote of the members of the legislature, but then the next year you had to go back to the baseline and maybe increase it 2% that year. So at under the existing structure, at best you could have a 2% increase off of a base year, which would basically have been approximately now the current budget, and that would be in effect for the next 10 years. This is literally the ravages of inflation and, you know, both their desire for some economic growth as well as again the inflationary pressures, I think it might be too constrictive on our ability to maintain a budget even at the current effective level. So to that end, today as we sit here, I'm not prepared to offer a specific amendment, but we have been having various conversations on mechanisms to modify the joint resolution in front of us to allow it be a little bit more flexible in its capping of expenditures. I want to emphasize that being a little more flexible and perhaps allowing some staged increments, perhaps 1% with a simple majority vote, perhaps an additional 2% with a 2/3 vote, and perhaps of the last 2% getting us to a potential 5% increase with a 3/4 vote of the legislatures, which is as all the folks here are well familiar, a 3/4 vote is a huge hurdle. So I think it would retain, but something of that stair-step concept would retain it as being a very enforcing and rigid commitment to the people that we will control expenditures. But yet it does allow, would allow under that stair step, some flexibility in allowing for a reasonable growth of government, in particularly in response to things that we don't always control. You know, I think our education budget is something on the formula driven. We don't have the ability to come in next year and say, oh, let's just hold that to a 15% across the board reduction. I don't think that would be good policy. We've got other formulary programs that we do want to constrain, but I think we have to be cognizant, such as the entire Medicaid structure, which is $1 billion in our budget. We have a change enforced upon us in the Medicaid formulary, which we quite frankly don't have that much control over. It could be forcing us up against that that constitutional limit. But so I'm just to bring this to a circle, I'd just like us to consider adding a bit of flexibility, however the mechanism may be, to the document as proposed. And again, besides that, we have been, I have been, you and I have been in communication, conversation, discussion with the members of this committee and the House on achieving that.
Thank you, Representative Hawker. Other questions, comments regarding HJR 9? We will be having public testimony tomorrow morning on this bill or this resolution. And we will also have public testimony next week. It is the intention to move this resolution next week, understanding that we have to have the support of a majority of the members of the committee. So we are taking nothing for granted, but nonetheless, we want to give the public ample opportunity to discuss it, comment on it. We also want to, again, suggest that all committee members and all members of the House look at this and look at it very seriously and bring your concerns and your comments forward. We welcome you to do that either in this forum, certainly my office and Representative Hawker's office are both open at any time if you have concerns with regard to HDR 9. Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We haven't had as much chance as probably with the others because I haven't been here. But just so you know, the members know, my concern, I believe that for government to function, there must be enough flexibility, because all I know is we can't begin to know what may happen in the future in this state. And I want to be sure that any kind of a limit allows government to function.
So noted. Representative Gruenberg, other comments? Okay. We will then Madam Clerk, there is nobody online. Is that correct? Okay. So we move on then and have public testimony on H.J.R. 26, a constitutional amendment regarding permanent fund inflation proofing and appropriations. Is there public testimony? We have online from on off-net, Arliss Sturgiluski. Arliss, are you with us?
I'm now unmuted. Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Well then, Senator, having never seen you muted before, you have the floor.
That's tough to do. But first of all, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, congratulations on having established this committee. I think that's just excellent. I'm very supportive of this constitutional amendment. I think there's a good number of reasons. I'll try and be brief, but I think the main thing is that it really offers a lot of stability in year-to-year amounts that are available. We've all seen the wide swings in the market. It's hard to believe, but when I served in the early, late 70s and early 80s, we were predicting $100 a barrel oil, and you've also seen the swings in that along with the market. But you need to be able to have some stability in your planning, and I think this certainly does it. I serve on as a trustee on the University of Alaska Foundation, which of course is primarily formed for scholarships for students and for Sheldon Jackson College. And we use very similar methods to that proposed in this constitutional amendment. And when you look at the large foundations across the country and college endowment programs, this is a very standard way of going. And I carried the inflation proofing on the fund when I was in the legislature. I believe it was in 1982. We talked just about to the principal, not to the earnings reserve. So this really pulls together that whole thing. And over time, markets do go up and markets do go down. It really assures a steady real rate of return for the fund, and that's going to protect it. So there's a lot of reasons that I think this is just an excellent way to go. The timing is good, and I will say this, if this passes the legislature, that I personally commit myself to working for this, because I think it's a really important issue.
Thank you, Senator. Are there questions to former Senator Sturzewski? Seeing none, thank you again, Senator.
Good luck.
Thank you. Going to Homer then, Mary Griswold. Are you with us, Mary?
Yes, thank you.
Mary, if you can identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony, please.
My name is Mary Griswold at PO Box 1417 Homer. I am an enthusiastic supporter of the proposed 5-0B payout limit because it constitutionally inflation-proofs the entire permanent fund. It sets a spending limit that forces us to resist the temptation to appropriate too much money when the fund is flush, yet makes distributions available in lean years. And because an annual payout based on market value is compatible with the fund's diversified portfolio that is managed in conformance to industry standards for long-term value over short-term gain. 5 POMV payout protects the value of the fund and provides a limited, predictable, and sustainable revenue stream. How the legislature chooses to divide the payout is an important question. The Permanent Fund Corporation takes no position on the use of the payout. 5 POMV is a management tool, not a distribution plan. However, the two are intrinsically linked. The use of the payout should not be set in the Constitution because this is an appropriation issue better left to the legislative process. However, the statutes 3713-140 and 3713-145 relating to permanent fund income and income distribution must be amended to conform to 5 PUMZ. I urge you to establish a comparable dividend formula when you change these statutes. 5 PUMZ is too important an asset to risk voter rejection by threatening their dividend check. For modeling purposes, we assume an 8% total return, 3% inflation, and a 5% real return. Under existing statute, 50% of the income available for distribution, or 4%, goes to the dividend program. Inflation proofing then takes 3%, leaving 1% for other legislative appropriation, which has never been touched. For this distribution to work under POMV, 80% of the 5% payout must be allocated to the dividend program to provide a comparable 4%. Inflation proofing of 3% has already been accounted for by establishing 5% payout, leaving 20% of the payout for other legislative appropriations, which is the same as the 1% under the existing distribution statute. 50% of the money available for distribution after inflation proofing cannot provide the same amount for dividends as 50% of the money available for distribution before inflation proofing. 50% of 8 translates to 80% of 5. It is time to move forward on a fiscal plan. This constitutional amendment, combined with a change to the statute securing 80% of the annual payout for dividends, is a critical step. Please promote a comprehensive package the voters will accept. It is a three-way win. The permanent fund gets a better management framework, the legislature gets a predictable revenue stream, and the people keep their dividend formula. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mary. Obviously, you have given that a great deal of thought, and our calculators are clicking as we worked through your math. Thank you very much. Are there questions for Mary? Representative Grunberg.
Two questions, and I may not have heard it. Ma'am, whom do you represent? And number two, could we get a written copy of your testimony?
Yeah. Yes, I represent myself, and I'd be happy to fax this copy to you.
I apologize. I guess we do have it already here. We have your written testimony already. I have seen it now. Thank you very much. It was excellent testimony.
Thank you, Mary. Other questions? Okay. Seeing none, thank you again. And we move then to Kenai, where we have Ed Martin. Ed, are you with us?
Sure am.
Ed, could you identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony, please?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ed Martin, Sr., 44332 Sterling Highway, number 36, Soldotna, Alaska, 99669. And I have some comments, if you'll bear with me here. I will speak my mind. It is straight talk. If passed, H.J.R. 26, as written, I and others, I'm sure, will resist its inclusion in our Constitution. I think it is one more poor way to manage the fund. The state legislature has a very large financial management problem, and so does the Permanent Fund Corporation Board of Trustees. They have to use the so-called prudent man rule. Investing 99% of our fund outside of our borders produces, since 1999, about a loss of $6,000 million of our fund. The sad part is that they continue the same policy and then are recommending this legislation to, in effect, take more from the people of Alaska and let government have more to waste. I consider the handling of this resource very wasteful. I think a common sense approach should be applied. Bet more on the owners of the fund by investing more inside our borders. And remember, the money has no value to the Alaska citizen without its use. The juggling of percentages this way and that on earnings when you're losing not only the principal but the earnings thereof. It does not take a rocket scientist to figure out that it's time to pull out of this nosedive. Fix the problem. Alaska citizens are the losers. Cut the size of government. It's too big, costs too much. Bring confidence of government back to the people you serve, and there will be a heavy political price paid. when the prudent citizen rule is applied at the ballot box. This legislation does not benefit the citizens, only special interests. The people are not buying it. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you, Ed, and thank you for your straight talk. Are there questions of Mr. Martin? Seeing none, thank you again, Ed. Also in Kenai, we have James Price. James, if you are there, please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes. My name is James Price. I reside on Island Lake Road in Nikiskie. My mailing address is P.O. Box 7043, Nikiskie 99635. I oppose the changes to the permanent fund that are brought about by H.J.R. 26. This legislation, in my opinion, brings our state one step closer to using the dividend earnings and perhaps even the principal to fund the operation of state government. I think the legislature should find a solution to the deficit problem before changing any provisions of the permanent fund, particularly provisions that allow spending of the earnings. Essentially, I'd like to see the dividend program off the table for legislative appropriations. This is the only action that I believe will promote the legislature to find real solutions to the growing deficit problem. This legislation doesn't solve the problem, and in essence, I believe, promotes continuation of the problem, not the solution. And it's for this reason I'm against H.J.R. 26. I think the earlier testimony regarding the stability of the earnings gives a lot of information to people as far as the reason for this legislation. And I think that it's just one step closer to an appropriation of the dividend earnings, which I oppose. Once again, I'd just like to say I'm against this H.J.R. 26. I ask this committee to reject this proposed legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Are there questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you again, Mr. Price. Next, also in Kenai, is Laurie Churchill. Laurie, if you were there, if you could identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Laurie Churchill, and I'm at P.O. Box 7043, Nikiskie. And I am also opposed to any changes in the appropriations of our PFD. I believe that a change in the Constitution should not be done without a vote of the people. We have a serious spending problem here in our state of Alaska as far as a bloated budget, and it needs to be cut drastically, and the sooner the better. A majority of our legislators have made campaign promises to their constituents. We were told by our elected officials that they would leave our PFD alone. This is a violation of your constituents' trust. Our legislative bodies need to cut the budget and leave the PFD formula alone. Thank you.
Thank you, Laurie. I might, in the spirit of the provision of good information, I am not in the least bit trying to be argumentative with you. However, I will point out that what we are discussing is a constitutional amendment which will require a vote of the people in 2004. So if approved by the legislature, this will indeed go before the people in November of 2004.
Thank you.
Are there questions for Laurie? Seeing none, thank you again, Laurie. Also in Kenai, we have, the name is a little difficult for me to get here. I think it's Petra Falkenberg. Petra, are you there?
I'm here, and it's Petria.
Okay, thank you. If you could identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Yes, my name is Petria Falkenberg, and I'm representing myself and the citizens of Alaska. And I'm at Box 3293, Kenai, Alaska. I basically am opposed to this bill because most candidates elected in November 2002 promised that they would not touch the permanent fund. And I just wonder if you're listening to 83% of the Alaska voters. And I think that the major problem lies with the overspending that this large government has, and I don't think that you guys are keeping a handle on a balanced budget. Our permanent fund really shouldn't be a source of revenue to run the government. And I'm opposed to the legislature coming through the back door to rob the PFD with bills of this nature. And I thank you very much.
Thank you. Other questions for Petria? If not, thank you again, Patria. All right. Are there other people to testify? There are none. Again, this is an opportunity for the committee to discuss this very large, and I'm sure what will become a somewhat controversial subject as we work our way through the process. Are there questions, comments, discussion amongst the committee members and or other members of the legislature who are here? Okay, Representative Wilson.
With the figures that we were given, it really kind of showed, and I think it should be at least commented on for the people that are listening, the fact that it's possible that our permanent fund dividend could disappear at various times, and with this resolution in place, it would be a more stable and a more assured dividend for the people of the state. Is that a correct statement?
I think that is a correct statement, yes. Other comments by committee members? If not, then I will again point out that both HJR 9 and HJR 26 will be subject of public testimony both tomorrow.
Tomorrow,
Tuesday, and Wednesday. If it seems as if we are overdoing the public testimony, so be it. I would rather overdo it than not. It's an opportunity for any who want to speak on these subjects to come before us and let their opinions be known. If there is no further business before the committee then, and without objection, we are adjourned.